practice conversation between teachers and teacher educators about research and practice. In episode 20, we discussed the third chapter from Tony Rossi and colleagues' 2015 book, Workplace Learning in Physical Education, Emerging Teacher Stories from the Staff Room and Beyond. We begin with an around-the-table discussion.
Thinking about workplace learning and actually in the context of sort of when they're doing their professional learning, we know that within the occupational socialization framework, we have first of all the anticipatory phase that has the most impact on how they're going to teach when they go into teaching. And this is because their beliefs are formulated during that time. And they're often representative of what's going on within school. And it's the things that they're very familiar with and they're comfortable with within a traditional curricula. So when they come to us in teacher education, we obviously, that has the least impact on how they will teach when they become teachers. So while they're doing that, we try and give them all these lovely ideas. And I think that for some of them, they really take them on, but then they go on to teaching placement. And during that time in teaching placement, some of those lovely ideas will get washed out and they will adopt a pedagogy of necessity, which is basically they will do what they need to do to jump through the hoops in order to pass their teaching placement. So I wonder how much of that, I know in my own placements as a teacher, that's exactly what happened because I did want to embrace it. And one of the things that came out of my own PhD study as well was that teachers really, the teachers that were the pre-service teachers really wanted to try out new things. But often if they didn't have the knowledge in the game that they were trying to deliver, they found it really difficult to take on teaching games for understanding or doing it through sport education or one of the other pedagogical models. So that was one of the big sticking points that then they would be advised to go and see the expert in the PE department, who was normally like the netball coach or the football coach or the person that it was the hockey coach outside of school or whatever, then they would actually revert back to more sort of traditional approaches towards delivery, which was skills, drills, game, not very long on a game, or alternatively, lots of game, but nothing in between. So it kind of gets lost in translation. And there's this messy process as well of trying out something new. And I think reflecting on my own experiences, just going back into teaching after having 9 years out, when I went back in last year in the year, you know, sort of 2019, 2020, that was one thing that I found that you don't really appreciate that messy we want everything to be perfectly packaged. And when you're trying stuff out for the first time, it doesn't look like that. Even with the best planning in the world, kids are so unpredictable. So if you have a bit of a disaster lesson because you're trying something out new, it probably puts a lot of students back in their box and thinking, actually, I'll just go with what's safe because I need to jump through the hoops. So I wonder whether mentors as well actually need to appreciate the fact that it is very messy. Sometimes it will go wrong. And children actually need to learn a new way of doing things as well. So it's almost like they need to learn the model along with the teacher. So I think I've gone on long enough, haven't I? Does anyone want to jump in? Michael, go for it.
Yeah, sure. I'll be happy to jump in. Michelle, great points. A lot to consider there. And I'm sitting amongst a distinguished panel of guests here. So I'll try to take it from the lens of practicing teacher and someone who has experienced teacher education from a lens of being a student going through it and now being a current professional and how that applies to workplace learning. And I think, your points of, teacher education as the least amount of transferability in terms of professional learning is an interesting comment because, everybody has different perspectives and experiences, and that really shapes their induction into teacher education and then their practicum experience with their cooperating or mentor teachers also provide a different perspective and framework in the necessity of getting things done. So I can see both points. I had a very enriching teacher education experience that I still try to continue up until today. And my cooperating teachers or mentor teachers through my practicum experiences provided me tools that were outside of the lens of teacher education, which I'm very grateful for that I can, you know, transfer to my induction years. And now as a seasoned professional in the field, it's something that I've also relished. I would try and understand, you know, how and Pete specifically, my consideration for all of this and workplace learning, how do, you know, teacher educators, you know, evaluate practicum spaces prior to sending pre-service teachers into them so that they know they're getting a fulfilling experience, so that they, when they enter into the profession in their induction years, is it more about the individual teacher as a guiding principal, or is it about the space and the environment that they're in as part of the full package and the whole environment? So something that I wonder about as a practicing teacher and someone who tries to give back to the profession, but that's something that I would like to learn more about from your perspective as Pete professionals.
Thanks, Michael. Good questions. You know, to carry on with Michelle's points about socialization, I think Ash really does ask some great questions about some of these things we have to consider with workplace learning. First and foremost, can we assume, using the analogy he did in the blog, that all workplace learning is good? I think we talked about that last week. I used the proverb, perhaps a bad experience is a good learning experience. Well, maybe that's not the case, right? And so I think we come back to that question again. And I really enjoy Michelle's review of socialization and again, the competing tensions that professional stage where our teacher candidates are being trained, they're competing with acculturation and then socialization in the occupation itself. And there's a lot going on and that really counter everything that we're trying to instill in PEAT programs. So I think that's something to think about. And then the other thing that made me ponder with Ash's blog this week is not only do PEAT faculty have to walk a tightrope when it comes to making sure that you know, their perspectives are conveyed, but conveyed respectfully and not making PE practitioners feel demeaned, you know, from the ivory tower context. You know, that is there is that tightrope there, and I notice it all the time. You have to be very, very careful when it comes to PE practitioners. But you know, Michelle's comments today resonate because, thinking more and more about it, it's not only PEAT faculty that have to think about that tightrope. It's PEAT candidates, because they're being taught new ideas, perhaps, maybe not so new. We can get into a whole discussion about models, right? But nevertheless, new ideas to the practitioners, okay? And they're walking that tightrope and trying to make sure that they're not, again, coming off in an arrogant sort of way with the practitioner, the mentor teacher, the cooperating teacher. So I think there's another tension there that we have to consider regarding, again, some of the points that Ash discusses in the blog.
Yeah, and I think it's the power of the mentor. Coming back, thank you, Clancy. That's really good. And I was saying, sort of coming from Michael's question about, you know, sort of the mentor, that mentor relationship, and how do we choose which schools our students go into in order to do their placements. And I think it's that mentor, it's picking the right mentor. I think you can be in any school. I can remember my third year placement was probably one of the most insightful placements that I'd ever been on, and my second year placement as well. Those two in particular were fantastic. And the one of them in particular, it was really tough school with children that needed a lot of time and a lot of energy, and that was quite hard. But the mentorship that I had was really, really good quality. So although I was in quite a tough school with, you know, real challenges, those challenges were a lot easier than being in a different school where it was very traditional, where I didn't quite fit and I felt quite uncomfortable. And it wasn't until I then became somebody that went into the schools to watch the teachers, you know, watch it, you know, so it was called a partnership quality assurance tutor. We used to go into the schools to kind of make sure that there was parity across the board. And the one student that really stuck in my mind, and we're going back quite a number of years now, but she wasn't great at teaching games. She was, you know, it just wasn't her thing, but she was amazing at gym and dance. And they were going to fail her placement because she wasn't, they were saying, oh, you know, she hasn't got the subject content knowledge, you know, she's not doing very well, I would expect more from a third year student. And I said to them, I said, have you seen her teach gym and dance? And they said, oh no, we don't do that here. So automatically it was like the guy that she was on placement with, they thought he was amazing because he was a football coach. But actually for her, she wasn't given the same opportunity. Like they'd never seen him to teach gym. I, you know, he wasn't by any stretch of imagination a gymnastics specialist. And it came down to that sport as technique approach that was so frustrating because they couldn't actually see what how amazing she was. And she did graduate and she did finish. But it took quite a lot of talking with that mentor and saying, well, actually, you know, do you need to think about this in a different way? You know, we don't want a football coach. We actually want her to be a PE teacher. So is she qualifying as a PE teacher or do you want a games coach? So we had to really go away and think about that. And I think also is making sure that we maintain our standards all the way through. When you talk about what a good placement is one that prepares you for the next placement so that you're ready for the next set of challenges. And I think it's when you get ones, you get those students that are just sitting on the border, they're not quite there yet. You know, I've been in that horrible position where I've had to fail a student on their placement and then let them go to a different school with a different mentor where they have a different experience and relationship, but it builds that confidence and it makes them ready to move forward. So in actual fact, that horrible decision of failing her was probably, you know, it's a different one to the one I was talking about before, but it was actually a good thing for her in the long run because she came out as that confident individual. And I'm not convinced that that necessarily would have happened if the dynamics weren't right with the, you know, with that particular mentor. So I think there's a lot that goes into it and it's making sure our mentors are really, really effective. What did you find, Michael, in terms of your mentorship and your mentor relationship?
Yeah, great question. You know, I had two great mentor teachers, and one was in health and one was in PE. And, you know, I found the, you know, first of all, they were veteran teachers, and I found the camaraderie with them to be really enhanced and to enhance my learning, and they seem to have the zest and passion to bring people along in the profession and give back to the profession. And it's something that I really appreciated and still keep in touch with them, you know, today. So it's it was very enriching for me. And then as far as my professional experience, something that I try and pass along and pay it forward for you know, pre-service teachers to try to give them an enriching environment. So, but we're speaking about, you know, roses here, and we're speaking about the best of situations, and not all placements and not all PE teachers have that, you know, passion and positivity and zest to try and bring pre-service teachers along. So I think we have to have a conversation as well about changing some of the narratives that are negatively impacting induction teachers and challenging teachers as well, because I think that every teacher comes from a different perspective and has their own preconceived biases and notions about what the profession is going to look like when they come in. So I think that conversation needs to be had about maybe some challenges or barriers that come along the way that we can try to attack head on and try to get ahead of and be proactive about instead of reactive.
And it's being reflective as well, isn't it? It's having opportunity to be reflective as a practitioner. And I think that's one of the things that I felt particularly more so when students are doing their degrees through universities, that they have that opportunity to step away from those power relationships and reflect with people that are not necessarily directly involved with their day-to-day mentoring, so they can really think about their practice and really think about how they're going to move forward. And that sometimes that's where that connection with the university is actually really, really important, because, you know, on the face of it, it looks all rosy and shiny, and how many students are not feeling that, or they're feeling the pressure and feeling the stress of day-to-day life within schools. So, you know, it's particularly if they have like what we call like a habitus mismatch. You know, PE is renowned for having a group habitus. We all have the same set, you know, shared dispositions and beliefs. And that often means that the people that are coming into physical education, teacher education, actually share those. They've already been recruited by their PE teachers. So actually, this is where it starts. But, you know, when they haven't necessarily had that, that they then go back into school and they're still not the best fit or the best match. And I can say, hand on heart, that was me. You know, I was never quite a best fit. And that was, I found that a real challenge, you know. So, Clancy, what do you think?
Well, first off, great points. And Michael has not only, you know, gone through as a teacher candidate and reflected on his relationships with mentor teachers, but now is a phenomenal mentor teacher for me in our program. So kudos to Michael, because he certainly reaped what he sowed and paid it forward. He's doing a wonderful job. And I really like what Michelle referred to earlier, the idea that, again, and this kind of what I've kind of settled on. Last week we talked about, geez, there's a lot of extenuating circumstances that can create a lot of challenges in the workplace. And do we have to think about these practica and internships and clinical experiences? Do we have to think of them in a different way? And I started thinking, you know, do we have to perhaps look at different, alternative models? And then what Michelle says today, I think, is what I've settled on. The key is the mentor teacher, the quality mentor teacher. Now, for last week, chapters 1 and 2, Rossi and his colleagues talk about how we immerse teacher candidates into placements where teachers are pressured by not only whether they're perhaps using updated models and pedagogies, right? But they're also pressured by extenuating circumstances, teacher turnover, water cooler talk and lunchroom talk, accountability and standardized testing and all these things. And I said, oh my gosh, geez. I started thinking to myself, is this really the best thing that we should be doing for teacher candidates? But Michelle's point today really resonates. And that is, yes, there are a lot of factors that are affecting teachers in good ways, but also bad ways. We need to find the mentor teachers to mold teacher candidates that look at these negative aspects of the profession, whether it's, for example, testing and accountability, for example, as one area that I've been interested in the past. And expose those teacher candidates to teachers, to mentors, to, again, master teachers that respond in the right ways, and then provide the quality learning experience for the teacher candidate to handle and navigate those challenging parts of the profession. So, you know, I agree with Michelle immensely.
Yeah. How do you find the staff room and your students in the staff room, just out of interest, Michael? So, like, in a real school experience, I know that sometimes staff rooms can be the most positive places, or they can be really toxic, and it's out, you know, it's being part of the broader school and where physical education fits within that school. So, you know, while you're a teacher on placement, I can remember going into the photocopier room trying to print off a load of stuff, but because I was the student, this chap came in, I think he was an English teacher in my fourth placement, and he absolutely annihilated me. And I, you know, when you stand there shaking in your boots, because he just really, really shouted at me for being in the photocopy room when I shouldn't have been. And I was probably treated like one of their sixth formers. And that was really uncomfortable. So, you know, at what point are they treated like the student, and at what point are they treated like the teacher, the member of staff? And it's almost that hybrid, isn't it? Particularly when they're coming in so young and it's secondary education.
Yeah, no, I'll hop in real quick. And I think you bring up a good point, and I want to share my personal experiences, but also bring it back into the blog, what Ash wrote. And he, you know, articulated very well in his blog that the invited to share, pre-service teachers and in-service teachers are invited to share in the emotion of human experience that was encountered in these spaces. Specifically, you're invited to explore how pre-service and beginning teachers subjectivizes might be constructed through workplace relations within the context of the departmental staff room. So that's something that, you know, kind of caught my attention and raised my eyebrows. I've had very positive interactions in the staff room. I've also had very negative interactions in the staff room. It depends on the day. I think from a PE lens as well, we are very unique in our interactions because I'm sitting in the PE office right now. This is a PE office only. So I have a little bit of a unique interaction with the PE teachers that I work with. And I'm really happy with the teachers that I'm currently working with, and we have great conversations about the profession, not about the profession. But it's really a unique cohort that you kind of intermingle with, and it's something that is, I think, different from a classroom teacher. So that struck me with Ash's blog, and I definitely want to invite Ash and get his thoughts on his own blog, because there's certainly been a lot said, and he's been hanging out on the sidelines here. So Ash, more than welcome.
No, I think there are off times where you just need to listen, because I think it's easy to interject. And I didn't need to be here. And so the conversation was running quite fine based on the blog that was written. I'm going to pick up a couple of things. So I guess I'm going to start with Michael's question around how do we pick, places where teachers go and study their practicum, and some of it's history. So we tend to work with schools for a very long time, and we know that, you know, the infrastructure and the distance to travel and everything else is in place. Others are recommendations, so you know somebody, or somebody knows the PE department, or somebody in the PE department, or somebody moves schools, so they could, you know, they come back in. So sometimes it happens that way, and generally it's fairly static. Some schools come in, some schools go out. We have conversation with them, they have conversation with us. And so there's kind of a process that way. But, you know, to pick up another point, there is a lot of power with a mentor. But I want to flip that a little bit, because one of the most interesting papers I think I wrote was with Lee Schaffer at McGill. And it was based upon Clendenin and Connolly's notions of living, telling, retelling, and reliving. So I was a teacher. I had a head of department who was quite old school, not very supportive. And I lived that experience, and then I wrote about it in my diaries. And then several years later, Lee and I went through those diaries to look at them again. And I went through them, and I told him a number of stories based upon those diaries, so the retelling. And then we started to look at this, and in reliving those stories, what I failed to do was acknowledge my head of department. I didn't acknowledge his life history. I didn't acknowledge the challenges he's had with the school. I didn't acknowledge the ways that he might have perceived me as a young teacher trying different ways of teaching, which the kids were buying into, and they weren't buying necessarily. Potentially buying into what he was doing, the challenge of that, his own biography of being a PE teacher, of broken promises, of all these sorts of things. And that kind of narrative that was going on with him. And we need to be aware of those things and sympathetic to those things. So when you said, and I don't remember who said it, I think it was Clancy said, it's the power of the mentor. Well, let's flip that. It could be the power of the academic. It could be the power of the institution. Oh my God, I'm working with Loughborough University. I have to work in a certain way. And there's a real, but they don't know what they're talking about. So how do I challenge them about this rubbish thing called models-based practice? when it doesn't work in schools, and it's but I can't do that because it's, well, it's Loughborough University, and it's you know, Dr. Ash Casey and all these sorts of things. So, you know, we need to be aware of that, kind of how we negotiate those spaces, and we don't become what is described in the chapter by somebody else, not the author, as virtuous researchers, or as I wrote, the smugness of virtuous researchers. We know all this, we know what has to happen, and therefore why aren't you doing this, and that doesn't make a good thing. So it's much more difficult process here, and some of it's down to the knowledge that we value in physical education. And we have a, you know, a continued lock ahead between schools, I've written down here, trying very hard to stand still, or some practitioners trying very hard to stand still to resist what's coming in. And they have certain non-negotiables themselves. So the kids must be well behaved, they must be silent, they must address you as sir or miss, they must do all of these things. And no form of teaching can occur until that kind of those parameters and those remits are kept. And you know, that's could be years or decades of experience of how that works in this school, and then knowing or seeing other trainee teachers going through the process and failing because they don't establish those criteria or those kind of lines. And you know, there was a notion of walking the tightrope between the university and the mentor and the teacher, but then there's the school treading a tight line with the university as well. And that's when it has to become kind of a partnership. But we've got to encourage, you know, the young people who we work with particularly to tell without telling. So to tell us their stories without telling on somebody else, so that as a university, as a teacher education, we can have those conversations. But they're very difficult conversations to have in the moment. So maybe they're conversations we have to have at the end of the teacher education process for that cohort of people, and say, right, so-and-so is now passed, they've gone through the situations that you've asked them to. Now, we had a couple of issues that were raised, could we sit down and have a conversation about them, so that they don't then become detrimental to the young teacher who's in that situation themselves. So I think there are lots of ways of looking at this, and lots of ways of, you know, thinking about the relationship between the ivory tower and the practicum and between the researcher as well. So those are the things that I wrote down. So now I'll pass it back to Michelle.
Okay, I'm going to pick up on the ivory tower. Back to me, lucky you. I'm going to pick up on that ivory tower. And I think that with that, that is how we're seen. Like when I went back into school, I left schools, however many, 9, 10 years ago, as Mrs. Flemons, that's who I was. And then when I went back into schools, I went in as Dr. Flemons, more so from the school's choice, you know, they wanted to use that. I hadn't actually even used it as an academic yet, so it was still kind of getting used to it. But I came with, it was almost like, I've always considered myself a relatively approachable person. Like I don't get in people's faces or anything like that, or jump from the high horse and tell them all wrong. I kind of sit back and I do listen and I do care, really care about how people feel. But I had this big barrier because of the doctor bit. And that was really hard. And if I made suggestions and said, oh, have you thought about doing that? Or, you know, because I got so excited that we could do something with the Key Stage 4 curriculum, or we could do, and I got shot down time and time again. And that was quite hard. So then I found that actually, funnily enough, I've got a thing with the photocopier room. Photocopier room is the best place to go and do stuff. Like you get the best conversations in the photocopying room because it's more of a relaxed environment. While you're stood there, luckily the PE office was right next door, so while you're stood there waiting for your little resources to come out, there you go, Michael's right there, I can almost see the photocopier. But you could sit and you could have conversations, and it was through, more was done through the power of suggestion and listening and leading in that regard, rather than having the title of doctor or leader, because that wasn't effective. It's about respecting their years of knowledge and their years of experience that might be different to mine, but that's okay. And actually, you know, when you look at what an outstanding teacher looks like, it doesn't always look like the model. We can't, everything we write as academics is almost, you know, you see it in your head and it's very sanitized. Like I said earlier, kids are so unpredictable, and you can have the best model in the world. You chuck it in the middle of a bunch of year eight and suddenly you can have absolute chaos. So, you know, I tried that with year seven cooperative learning and gymnastics. You know, the first couple of sessions was very unique, shall I say. Stuck with it, grew with it. The kids got used to it and we ended up with some not bad results. You know, it kind of came out, but it was new to me because I wasn't actually introduced to any of that until I became a lecturer and tried it out on 18 to whatever year olds, you know, in teacher ed and on sport and PE courses. So it was different again. So I think it's appreciating the growth with everyone that as the ivory tower, we know so much. We have that privilege of being able to read and research a lot. However, we don't have that day-to-day experiences and the dynamic relationship that teachers have, and their voices are so valuable because they do have that, and they know what works for their children. But it's having that comfort, that space, I think, and that time to plan and do something different. I think I've said it before on a previous podcast, 6 minutes to plan for an hour lesson in the UK. That's the reality of it in your working day. So everything you do tends to be outside of your working day because you're teaching all day. So, you know, if you're going to do something innovative and new, you have to plan time especially for that. And that can be quite challenging. And sometimes that can also cause pressure and stress. And if you're saying do something new, and they're thinking, hang on a minute, I've just got to survive the week, that change isn't necessarily going to happen. So we've got to really think about all of those different things going on. I think I've talked long enough. Clancy, do you want to join in?
Absolutely, Michelle. And you are very much in, very respectful and in touch with any professional or practitioner you come across. So I couldn't agree more. And I connect with Ash's point, and I'm reminded of a previous podcast about research. And again, walking that, I think the phrase of the day is walking that tightrope for me. You know, being in the ivory tower and that research lens. And I'm reminded of Dr. Leguetti's research that we covered in a previous podcast that we almost have to get out of the way. And I think that's what Ash is referring to in the blog and in chapter three, is that we need to find a way to make the research not only the agenda of the researcher or the PEAT faculty or whomever, but also important to the practitioners in the trenches as seeing it as a valuable learning experience for them as well.
Definitely. I think, yeah, absolutely. And it's having more voice from those PE teachers. Like, I've seen outstanding teaching and they might not have necessarily used the model perfectly. What they've done is that they've either combined it and it's become a bit of a hybrid, or alternatively they've actually just put their own spin on it because that works better with their own children. And I think it's, you know, we like things very clean and tidy, and sometimes that clean and tidy just isn't necessarily going to fit in school. So we need to make sure that we give, you know, like I said, we give that space and that respect for their knowledge and their understanding in order to make, you know, to make it work for their classes. So, you know, there's the ideal and then there's the somewhere in the middle. And I think sometimes maybe the somewhere in the middle can actually be a better fit.
Yeah, well taken, Michelle. Thank you. Great points, and resonate with Clancy as well. You know, Michelle, we can speak after this, but I know an internationally renowned PEAT researcher in cooperative education, if you want to speak to him. I think he's at Loughborough University. I've heard of him before. He's got some incredible work. So if you want to touch base with me after, I'll connect you with him.
Yeah, I think I might, if I can recall, is it that guy Casey?
Right, I'm stopping you all talking now. That's just getting ridiculous. Yeah, I mean, I guess the challenge here is to, you know, understand what people are experiencing, but not tolerating some of the stuff that goes on. And it's that, it is that tightrope between, you know, finding places for young people to go and learn with experienced practitioners who put a huge amount of time and effort and support into these individuals, and acknowledging what we're trying to say to take, you know, the profession forwards, and to think about the way that these, you know, these young teachers can do that. Because people do want to change. There is innovation there. People are revisiting curriculum. They are looking at what's happening. And it's having the bravery to take the first step. So, I mean, I've got a quote in my office that was from Martin Luther King, which I've used in blogs before. It goes, "You don't have to see the whole staircase just to take the first step." And, you know, those are the processes. But we cannot allow for homophobic, heteronormative, you know, racist, sexist, gendered, you know, language and intent to go on, even if, as we said last week, it's just a joke.
And that's where our discussions ended. I'd like to thank Michelle, Michael and Clancy for their company and their thoughts. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and hopefully you'll choose to catch up with us next time when we continue to explore Rossi and colleagues' book.